Okay, so we're going to go ahead and get started. Good morning. You are in session number 4083, and I'm Terry Wright. I'm the director of the Center for School Health and Education at the American Public Health Association. This is a sponsored session of the center, and I'm going to be your moderator for this particular session. Appreciate you being here. There are materials on the side that you're welcome to take as many as you'd like with you. It also has my card in there and information on about our website for the center if you'd like to learn more. In the interest of time and really wanting to share the motto with you, I'm not going to go into a lot of background on the center. I'm going to be brief on that. But if you anything additional information you'd like, you can go to our website and get that. So let me see. Where is the arrow? Here we go. So I do not have any financial or commercial relationships to disclose. And I'd like to start with just going over how the flow of what we're going to do today will go. We're going to start out, of course, we already did greetings. So I'm going to give you a little background on the center. I'm also going to give you some information about the work of the center. And then we're going to introduce one of our special projects and then turn it over to our panelists who will go give you more information about the project as well as why we're going through school-based health centers to make a difference. And we will reserve time for question and answer, so I invite you to jot your questions down because at the end we will be able to address them. So first of all, the center was established in 2010 at the American Public Health Association, and it was an opportunity to have a focus on graduation as a public health priority. It's grounded in policy, APHA policy 20101, for those of you who keep track of that, as well as in Healthy People 2020 objectives, our nation's health guide. As you know, I don't know if you came to the session. How many of you were in the session yesterday? Okay, so you heard Dr. Koh mention Healthy People 2020, and for the first time ever, there's an objective in that health policy document that speaks to on-time graduation with a regular diploma, 4 years after after entering the ninth grade. It's first time, and it's one of our 12 leading health indicators. Now, we all knew this intuitively, that graduating from high school makes a big difference in adult health and adult well-being, but to actually incorporate it in a health policy document is rather revolutionary. And it lands responsibility for making that happen in the health community as well as in the education. Educators already knew that that was important. Now it puts it in the health in the purview of the health community. And because we are public health, we always think about primary prevention and early intervention. So it really challenges us in a different way to think about what we're doing and how we're going to impact the lives of young people so they graduate on time. Those objectives, as you know, guides a lot of the funding that comes out of the federal government in the health arena for health services, as well as CDC, around prevention and other aspects of what they do. So it's a pretty serious statement to say that on-time graduation from high school is a leading health indicator for the country. So we're grounded in that notion, and we are committed to advocating for those strategies that are going to make a difference and that will promote on-time high school graduation for all students. Our mission is that the Center for School Health and Education at APHA advances school-based health care as a proven strategy for preventing school dropout. We do this through awareness, advocacy, and partnerships. Those are our three primary ways of making that happen. We have, however, one key strategy, and again, that's advancing school-based health care, because when you peel back the layers of the onion to find out why young people drop out of school, or as we heard yesterday, are pushed out of school, when you peel back those layers, you find that the social determinants for young people dropping out of school are also the social determinants of health. They are actually two sides of the same coin. And again, we knew this conceptually, but on the ground, a lot of our work is siloed, and we don't necessarily come together and recognize a common vision for all young people being successful in school and ultimately graduating. So at APHA, we at the center, and I have two colleagues, Leslie Parks, who's the deputy director, raise your hand, Leslie, and Kelly Nelson, who is our program associate at the center, and then our evaluation consultant is Janet Zimmerman over there, and that's why we're featured there. That's our small team. We're small, but we're mighty, and we're very, very committed to making sure that we achieve health and educational equity for all young people. All of our work, and when you go to our website, all of our documents and our framework and our philosophy through a lens of social justice and equity. And we make no apologies about that, and that's the frame from which public health comes from, and that's why it's grounded at APHA. So our key strategy, as I said a few minutes ago, is looking at school-based health centers in the as the core avenue for making a difference in that school. How many of you are familiar with school-based health centers, other than the ones, okay, wonderful. So I don't have to tell you then that they are like having a health center in the school and providing primary care, mental health services, and depending on where you are in the country, oral health services, vision care, care coordination, chronic care management, et cetera, et cetera. However, what's different about the model that we're advocating for is that because we know school-based health centers have the trust of the young people who they serve, they also have the track record with the faculty, staff, and parents of that school population, and we have that all. If I invite you to go to the literature, you'll see it on our website. We have lots of documentation now that school-based health centers make a difference in school climate, grade point average, as well as absenteeism and tardiness, and even with some populations that are most at risk for dropping out of school. We have the evidence now. They've been around 30 years, 40 years, depending on where you start counting, early to the mid-70s when the first one was established. And so we know now that they can make a difference in the lives of young people. And so what we're doing with that model through the center is building on that reputation, building on that evidence, and saying, okay, you've done a great job with the kids who come in the school, in the clinic. You've done a great job in small groups of young people. You've done a great job one-on-one caring for young people and then returning them back to the classroom. Let's open up that success to the entire school population. So taking a population health focus across the entire school population, not just the young people who come in the door for clinical services. That is the motto we're espousing, and that's what this project you're going to hear more about in a little while is all about. So we believe that if we go through a school-wide approach and we begin with a school-wide assessment, right, that's typical public health. That's what you see up in the green circle there. And I think if I do this, it works for you. Yes. So up in this green circle here, assessment, planning, and intervention and evaluation, those are the hallmarks of public health. So taking a public health primary prevention approach. First step, you have to do an assessment. And the way that we are advocating for that assessment to be done is through an instrument. Some of you may be familiar with it, called RAPS. Anybody heard of RAPS? Rapid Assessment for Adolescent Preventive Services. And then we added a dimension to that that we're calling the public health dimension. So let me go back and talk a little bit about RAPS as an assessment. RAPS is computerized, one-on-one. It's been tested to be reliable and valid. It inquires of young people about the morbidities and mortalities that contributes to 70% of their condition, of morbidities and mortalities. So it asks them the questions about their behaviors and stressors that we know over time contribute to 70% of adolescent morbidities and mortalities. So what am I talking about? Some of the questions include, for example, I started to put it up there, but it's so tiny you're not going to be able to see it when you, because it's electronic. It's not a paper version. It's not intended or designed to be administered in a paper fashion. And it's not an interview tool. I think that's very important, because part of the advantage of it in the one-on-one self-administration is that young people are more likely to be honest and frank and authentic in their responses, as opposed to a number of other assessments where the provider is interviewing the student. And then we know what happens. The student gives you the answer that they think you want to hear from them. So it reduces the likelihood of them revealing some of the most personal, private, and sensitive areas. For example, are you having sex? Is one of the questions. Any type of sex. Are questions around sexual orientation, around carrying a weapon to school, around being bullied or teased, being in an interpersonal relationship where there's violence, use of either illegal substances or over-the-counter substances in an abusive way, are the types of questions that are being asked, and asked in a way that you get a high probability of an honest, frank response. So that's the instrument that that's the core of RAPS. What we did for this particular pilot that you're going to hear more about is we added a number of questions, and we're calling it RAPS/public health. So what kinds of questions might that include? It includes the questions that get at those social dimensions. For example, homelessness. For example, electricity in the home. Right? You can't manage asthma with a nebulizer if you don't have electricity at home. And we know that's one of the major chronic illnesses of adolescents where that caused them to be either late or absent from school. High rate of asthma, particularly in urban communities. So we ask about electricity. We ask about having to care for someone else in that family, right? It could be their own offspring or parents who are in need, or elderly parents who they're responsible for. I mean, these are the lives that they're living. And if we don't ask them in a way where they'll be honest and not embarrassed about it, we won't be able to do anything about it. We won't be able to intervene. We also asked them about, perhaps because we found there's a lot of undiagnosed asthma, we asked them about trouble breathing or participating in sports. We also asked them about being in a violent relationship, interpersonal relationship. We asked them about their grades. Did you get a C or better on every class last semester? Because we know that that's a warning sign of having trouble. And we ask them about literacy, whether or not they're able to read. And we do it in a way that is, again, protective, and that we're more likely to have honesty. So in the model, that data is then, the responses can be intervened on the clinical level, one-on-one, in the clinic, where that's needed, and it's particularly those issues that might be acute and need immediate intervention. But then also, and this is where our model comes in, they can be aggregated, and you can do an assessment or an analysis by population, gender-specific, as well as age or pro-age specific, to see in the aggregate what is happening across the population and do the kind of program planning and intervention that is appropriate and recognize the interconnections between all of those different social issues and how they impact educational success. So that's the assessment and the planning part of the process that we are demonstrating in this particular pilot that you're going to hear more about. The other parts of our work include identifying a stress, chronic stress, having young people tell us. We haven't implemented that yet. We will be in the next 6 weeks, capturing from them in their own language what are the elements in their environment, whether it be home, community, or school for that matter, that causes them stress, however they define it, which may be very different than how we define it as adults. I'll never forget the angst that that one young woman experienced because she wasn't able to participate in the prom, in her opinion, because she had a zit on her nose. Okay, and so while that might be the small annoyance for her, coupled with other issues, might be a stressor in her environment to the whole world of living in a community or in a neighborhood that where there's a lot of violence going on. I mean, you can go from one extreme to the other, but how that young person characterizes it is what we're going to be asking them to share with us, how they cope with it, and then what other strategies might be appropriate, and then helping the school personnel and clinic personnel understand what's going on in their lives. Many of them know, but acknowledging it, documenting it, and then focusing on coping strategies that are relevant, that are gender specific, because the literature shows us young women tend to internalize and young men tend to externalize what they're experiencing. So we want to make sure it's gender specific and age appropriate. We're working in a high school and a middle school around this particular project. No, not that one, but the pilot program is both middle and high school. This one, the chronic stress, is high school only. And then finally, one of our other activities that we will be embarking upon is the integration of public health and primary care. Working with school-based healthcare leaders around the country, this is a CDC-funded grant, over the next 5 years to integrate these two concepts. Great job around primary care. We know that. It's in the literature. How can we move upstream through school-based health centers, through school-based healthcare, and integrate the public health component more deliberately, intentionally, and school-wide, population-based. That's yet to be launched. It will be launched next spring. We're doing the assessment work right now and the planning to be able to launch that. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce you to our panelists who will present in this particular order. The first gentleman that we will have is Darryl Allen, and he will be talking about intervention and prevention beyond the clinic. He's going to elaborate a lot more because he's in the clinic. Darryl is a licensed mental health counselor in Michigan. He has over 20 years of counseling experience in both the private and public sectors. He has a master's degree in counseling from Wayne State University and is currently the mental health therapist at the school-based health center that is being operated by St. John Community Health Investment Corporation at Central Collegiate Academy. And also, this, as I said, the partner school, the middle school is Durfee Middle School. His clinical experience includes outpatient settings, substance abuse clinics, at-risk adolescent group homes, family service agencies. His specialties include depression, anxiety, substance abuse, domestic violence, trauma and grief, life skills development, unresolved emotional issues, and life transitions. So the first person you'll hear from is Darryl Allen. Then second, after Darryl, we'll have Stephen McGee, who is going to speak about partners in educational success, the school-based health center beyond the clinic. However, Mr. McGee's perspective is that of the principal of Central Collegiate Academy. It's with great joy that we have pulled him into APHA, folks, the principal, okay, into APHA to join us to present his perspective of the school-based health center and how it can potentially impact the entire school population. According to Mr. McGee, health services to all students and even the local community are a priority for him. He believes that it's important for families as well as the students to be healthy and able to learn. So he's been a proponent of school-based health care for years. We had the privilege of having dinner with him last night and found out that he's from a family of 10 nurses. Okay, so I think he gets it somehow. I can't imagine that 10 nurses haven't worked and influenced him in that particular area. Then after Mr. McGee, we're going to have Dr. Janet Zimmerman. She's a senior planning and evaluation consultant for JFM Consulting Group in Detroit, and I introduced her earlier as our consulting evaluation manager. Janet serves as the lead evaluator on this pilot project. Her recent work includes serving as the evaluation manager for a multi-site cluster evaluation of a health policy initiative that was funded by the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. I was the program director on that a few years ago. A senior research scientist and program director at the Michigan Public Health Institute, and a researcher and visiting assistant professor at the University of Michigan. So I'm going to turn it over to each of our panelists who will have 15 minutes to bring their perspective to this model, and then at the end, as I said, we'll have time for questions and answers.